This hour of the Jason Rant Show brought to you by MM Comfort Systems. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So we were supposed to start this show talking about the rollbacks. The King County, Snohomish County rollback into phase number two, and perhaps even phase number one rollback for Pierce County. A decision that was going to be announced today by Jay Inslee. Now, the good news is that we're not going to make that announcement because instead, Governor Jay Inslee put his announcement, put his whole phase-in, phase-out program on pause. So that's good news, right? None of us want to see any of the counties be rolled back. Now, obviously, we want to see the counties roll forward. We want to see them go into phase number three and four, and we want this all to go away and go back to some semblance of normalcy. But at this point, we'll take a pause. But a pause is kind of confusing. We have an arbitrary set of numbers from an arbitrary program get put on pause arbitrarily, and a lot of folks are confused as to what exactly that means. So, Governor, explain that.
This means all counties for the next 2 weeks will stay in the current phase that they're in this morning. Okay. At the end of the two-week pause, we will evaluate the metrics at that time, the number of cases per 100,000, the hospitalizations.
Okay. So then we're just kind of in a holding pattern for 2 weeks, and we're wondering still, what data are you looking at? Because you've got the data right now, and you had the data yesterday, and you had the data a couple days ago, and you said we were trending in the wrong direction, but then today you're all like, well, maybe the direction isn't trending in the wrong side anymore.
The potential plateauing of the COVID activity in the state of Washington, which obviously is good news.
Okay, so okay, that's good. So that's the good news. So how long do we have to continue to do what it is we're doing before we can open things up again?
If we continue this pace of vaccinations, we think sometime this summer we potentially could get to a level of vaccination that would give us confidence where the state could step back.
We think maybe we could possibly sometime reopen at some point in the summer, maybe kind of, sort of.
I love confidence.
Possibly.
Yeah, I possibly love confidence.
This summer?
You know, he didn't specify, so.
But this summer?
I don't know. Maybe. Possibly.
Possibly. Sometime.
Perhaps.
Kinda. Sorta. Okay. I watched and listened carefully. And I kept waiting for some specifics. And I waited, and I waited some more, and I waited even some more, and those specifics never came. And then I waited for some intelligent questions to be asked by members of the media, and that was a fool's errand of mine, and that's on me. I own that. That was stupid. I should not have waited for that.
Way to be accountable, Jason.
I own that fully. I can't remember who asked that question. I think it was from the Herald, who goes, is there a way to incentivize people to get vaccinated? Like, maybe give them a hat. An actual question that was asked by an actual reporter.
Oh, boy. You mean a hat?
He says, essentially, we're going to wait and see to get back to normal once we hit that number of people who get vaccinated. Well, what's that number? He has no idea. The fact of the matter is, he has no idea what he's doing. And he just won't admit that there isn't a magic number, but he keeps telling us that he's waiting for that number. He's waiting for a number to get a hit, but he doesn't know what that number is. It's one of those things where he'll know it when he sees it. That's not good enough. He has too much power. The Democrats had the opportunity to curtail some of that power. They chose not to curtail it. And now it's on all of us to not just complain about this, but do something. We have right now the power to change things in Olympia during this next election. And yes, it's a long time away. It certainly feels much longer than it actually is. But this is now on us to get more involved. We did this to ourselves. We had the opportunity to change things in Olympia. We didn't do enough. That is on us. We didn't change enough minds. Some of you did not vote. Many, if not most of you, did not do enough to talk to neighbors and friends and family members, to engage with Democrats, to get them to understand what is on the line. And as a result, we are in this holding pattern of dealing with a governor who doesn't know what he's doing. He's holding on to this power as much as humanly possible, and he has the audacity to tell us, to laughably tell us, that counties actually want him to have all of this power. He literally said that. That counties don't want to make these decisions on their own. They want him to do it for them.
Well, we have found broad desires across the state to have as much comprehensive statewide approach as possible from our local partners. They sometimes have more difficulty making these very difficult decisions than the state does, because when the state does it as a uniform, comprehensive approach, it has the moral force behind it that's easier to seek compliance with.
What?
So this has served us very well in the state of Washington.
Has it? It served us very well in the state of Washington. You were just about to push half of the state back a phase.
And that was the plan, Jason.
That was literally the plan. You're sounding the alarms about vaccine hesitancy. Just a few weeks ago, you pushed back Pierce County. So for you to say that it served the state very well so far is nonsense. It hasn't. You like it because you have total control. You like it and you think it works for these different counties because you're not actually talking to the counties. How many times have we had lawmakers on this show from these different counties and cities in these counties saying the exact same thing, which is they're not talking to us. We're sending letters that aren't getting any return correspondence to. How many times have we heard that? Yesterday we had on the show Russell Weed, the mayor of Sultan. Last week, and later on, in fact, we're going to have on the show Nate Nearing, Snohomish County Council member. They're not hearing back from the governor. Governor Inslee talks to a few people, right? He'll talk to the folks who will listen to everything he says and become yes men and women. He'll talk to Mayor Jenny Durkin. He'll talk to Pierce County Council member Derek Young, I'm assuming. He'll talk to Dow Constantine in King County. I'm assuming he'll talk to the people in his little echo chamber, his small group, but that's about it. Meanwhile, the vast majority of people are going unrepresented in Olympia, and they don't have a voice at the table with Jay Inslee. So that's now on all of us. This is the reality. We have vaccine passports already here. He has created a system, and we'll talk about it later on in the show when State Rep Jesse Young stops by. He is creating vaccine-only arenas, sections, in churches, at graduation ceremonies. He is allowing public schools, universities, to mandate vaccines. All while saying, oh, well, we don't have vaccine passports. What are those? You have to show paperwork proving you've been vaccinated to go to Wazoo, to go to UW. He's allowing it to take place at Pacific Lutheran, at Seattle U. He's allowing this to take place at sports arenas in certain sections, which, by the way, and I want you to think about the optics of this, and then we'll go to traffic. If you're going to go, if they end up doing this, because they have the ability to do it now, you go to T-Mobile Park in the vaccinated only section, which, by the way, you still have to wear a mask in the vaccinated only section of an outdoor stadium, you'd have to go through a separate entrance. You are segregating not just the vaccinated from the unvaccinated. You're having them go through a separate entrance. Should they use separate bathrooms and water fountains?
That doesn't sound like a move in the right direction.
Does that not sound just awful to anybody? Just from an optics perspective, does that not sound off-putting and kind of terrifying to anybody else? Did he not think this through? A silly question. Again, I own that one. Let's not ask if Jay Inslee thinks anything through. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, some truly despicable video was caught on body cam of an officer dealing with a truly despicable racist woman when she got pulled over. We're going to play it for you when we come back. Earlier today, I was on the Faulkner Focus. If you want to watch that video, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to my YouTube channel where you can watch it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So, thankfully, an officer who happened to be Latino had a body camera on to catch an interaction he had with a black woman who says she's a teacher. He pulled her over, apparently for multiple traffic infractions. Although she ended up only getting a ticket for using her cell phone. And I say, thankfully, he was able to catch it on camera for two reasons. Number one, this was actually his personal body camera that he purchased for situations like this. He doesn't actually, his agency doesn't have a department fully equipped with body cameras yet. Number two, it comes in handy because this woman, this rotten, awful human being, filed a complaint against him after this interaction. A complaint that obviously is false, as you'll be able to find out in a moment. Because this is how it all unfolded when he pulled this awful woman over.
Good morning.
Which is, and the speed limit is 40, and I was going
right out the gate.
So why are you harassing
me?
You
are correct. I pulled you over because
you're a murderer.
Because
yes, I started to record because
you can't
you're a murderer.
You can't be on your cell phone while you're driving.
I wasn't on my phone. I was recording you because you scared
me. You can't use your cell phone while you're recording.
I can record you.
May I have your driver's license?
It's at my apartment.
What's your apartment?
It's at my home. I'm just taking my son to his.
Do you have your driver's license?
I mistakenly left it at home.
Do you have a picture of your driver's license?
Yes, I do.
May I have it?
And can you call your supervisor, please?
I already did. He's on his way.
Good, because you're a murderer.
Ugh. Okay.
So right out the gate, you're a murderer. Imagine being a cop right now in this country at this moment, having to deal with a monster like this. You know, we're talking about how evil police officers are and how dangerous it is to be a black person when pulled over. It doesn't sound like she's scared, does it?
No.
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. That doesn't sound like someone who's in fear. It sounds like someone who feels empowered to be a rotten human being. And it gets worse.
And so you're giving me a cell phone ticket? Is that why you're harassing me?
It's not harassment. Yeah. I am enforcing the law.
I have a right to and record the police when they're harassing me.
By all means, but you can't do it while you're driving.
I wasn't texting or none of that.
Do you have that picture?
And you scared me and made me think you were going to murder me.
Okay, well, I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, that's not just a feeling. You're a murderer.
Okay. Can you zoom in on that for me,
Jim? Sure.
Thank you.
And I'm perfectly legal, and I'm a teacher. So there.
Congratulations.
Oh!
You're a murderer.
What's your last name? I can't see that there.
Well,
if
here you
stop,
go,
stop
murderer.
Shaking. Zoom in on that for
no,
me.
No, because
right?
You're scaring me. You're threatening to kill me and my son.
Did you cut out the threat to kill her and the son?
I didn't cut out the threat,
okay.
No.
Just double checking.
Okay. I'll tell you what. You keep smiling.
Yeah,
you're on camera.
You're trying to threaten to kill me. I'm not smiling. You're the one who's crazy.
Hold that still. I can't see that.
Okay. it almost sounds like, and this part I'm actually unsure of, it almost sounds like the whole, well, you're threatening to kill me and my son. Throwing that out there as a means to get out of a ticket that she knows she earned. Like, she's just going to throw that out there to see how she can get this cop to react. And kudos to this officer who has the patience of a saint. Seriously. He has the patience of a saint. And then it turns to just racial abuse.
Is this your car?
Yes, it is. And you're trying to say I stole my own car because you're jealous?
Yeah, I don't think about? So. You wait for me right here, okay?
You're jealous.
All you need to do is your signature. He's only signing using your cell phone while you're driving. That's it.
There you go, ma'am. Sign inside the red box right there.
For him being a Mexican racist. What is that name? Gasco?
Sign the citation, ma'am.
Here you go, Mexican racist. You're always going to be a Mexican. You'll never be white. You know that, right? You'll never be white, which is what you really want to be.
There you go, dear.
White.
Have a good day.
You want to be white so bad.
There are people like that that exist that are leading the conversations around policing in this country. She has more power right now in that national conversation on policing than that officer. And I want you to think about that. Simultaneously going on, we have the conversation. And I think it's a little bit of an absurd conversation, but we need police departments to look more like the community that they're policing. You have a Latino officer in a city, and this is in San Dimas, California, that has a large Latino population. Southern California has, in and of itself, a large Latino population, who's being called essentially not Latino enough, a sellout for becoming a cop. Imagine how difficult it is to become an officer if you're Latino when you're getting hit with this kind of rhetoric, or black when you're getting hit with this kind of rhetoric. This is the kind of stuff that is despicable, and unfortunately it's happening on a regular basis. This is the kind of video that we need to put out there. We got to shine a spotlight on as much as humanly possible. This is the kind of abuse that cops get hit with every single day. Every single day. And this is not just happening in Los Angeles. It is happening here in Los Angeles, or in Seattle. It's happening here in Seattle on a regular basis. I see it. I witness it. We report on it. But if you were to go down to some of the Antifa events and riots and demonstrations that become riots, you will hear this. It's happening in Olympia. It's happening in Fife. It's happening in Everett and Snohomish. When these anti-cop lunatics get together, this is what they do. And it is on all of us, when we witness it, to put it out there so that people truly understand that this is what cops have to go through on a regular basis. This is abuse that no one should have to put up with. And the more we shine a spotlight on it, the more minds we win over to our side as we fight to defend police officers. I talked about this earlier today on the Faulkner Focus, so I truly hope you go ahead and watch that video. It was a lengthy hit. It was about 8 minutes long, which is why we're not going to play it. But it's available on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/JasonRants. Text the keyword rants, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on KTTH. We've got an exclusive up over at KTTH.com. The King County Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention. This is where you go, where we send all those bad guys, where we're pretending to jail, because obviously in King County we don't really put that many people in jail anymore. Well, guess what? They dramatically lowered the hiring standards in order to promote more people of color and LGBTQ employees. I learned this thanks to a source over in the department. And as a consequence, the department has effectively adopted affirmative action policies instead of committing itself to hiring the candidates best suited for the job. And given the fact that this particular job that they're hiring for, correction sergeants, a managerial role, roles that are put in positions of power where they have to maintain a sense of order, a sense of commitment to policies, it is rather tragic how this is all unfolding. Now, it actually started a few years ago, back in 2018. The Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention, the DAJD, they did an equity impact review for the promotional process for these correction sergeants. And it found that while a bunch of minority candidates actually applied, few passed the written portion of the exam, of the process. Now, rather than address why the results looked the way that they did, the department decided to just lower the threshold to pass the exam. And by lowering the threshold to pass the exam, I mean they got rid of the threshold to pass the exam. They did this in a move to promote staffing equity, a term that just doesn't mean anything anymore. It bears no resemblance to its original definition. But instead of doing anything having to do with equity, it actually ensures that underqualified candidates are being promoted at a time where there's increased scrutiny of members of law enforcement. Now, correction sergeants, they manage correction staff when they're booking, when they're processing, when they're supervising, when they're controlling the inmates that are in detention. They train staff members, they ensure the correctional facility safety, and they handle the emergencies that could end up restraining the inmates that are housed at the facilities. It is a significant job. It's a big job, and it requires a significant understanding of the policies and procedures over at the DADJ. Now, according to the process as it existed, first you would need at least a 70% score on a multiple choice written exam before you were able to move on to an in-person assessment to earn this correction sergeant promotion. So just a 70%. Written multiple choice. 70% is not a lot. That is barely a C if this were a school. Barely a C. But after the equity assessment, according to the director, John Diaz, he saw what he believed to be troubling results. In an email that I was able to obtain that was sent on March 5th, John Diaz declared the following to his staff. He wrote, "It is imperative that department services and operations are in alignment with the King County vision to create a just society where all people have equitable opportunities to thrive." Huh. He announced that he saw too few people of color and or LGBTQ employees passing the written exam. Except the data doesn't actually point that out. The data conflicts with that line. Because at the time of the review back in 2018, there were a total of 46 applicants for the correction sergeant's role. Of those, of the 46, 26 self-identified as either a person of color or LGBTQ. So that's over 56%. 18 of the applicants, which was just shy of 40%, identified as white, and two applicants didn't answer. So the raw data shows the process is very clearly equitable from his standpoint because a disproportionate number of minority candidates actually applied. But equity is being misinterpreted as meaning equal results because Diaz, the director, expressed concern that there were too few minority candidates passing the written exam. He complained that, quote, "demographic statistics for applicants that scored 70% or higher versus demographic statistics for total applicants, the department identified a lack of representation of some BIPOC groups among those who scored 70% or higher." But the data shows almost an equal amount of minority LGBTQ applicants qualified than white applicants. The only number that separated the two was one. There was one fewer minority candidate than white candidate that passed the exam. One. 9 and 10, respectively. He ignored that data. Instead, he interpreted it through a radical equity lens, and then he announced he was changing the criteria in order to pass the exam. Instead, he completely removed the 70% bar in order to move forward in the process, even though he told me that the vast majority of the applicants scored just below the 70% threshold. Now, he didn't explain what just below the 70% threshold was. Maybe it was 67%. Okay, well then why not make the threshold 65%? Why not move it just a little bit? Instead, he got rid of it completely because he wanted to guarantee, it seems, that anyone who could just put a pen to the paper could move forward to the next process, to the next step in the process. And what is the next step? In-person assessment, which is weighed higher at 60% than the written exam at 40%. Why do you think that is? Because then it allows him to see the person. See the person. See whether or not they're black. Try to gauge whether or not they're gay versus straight. Because then if you're seen, if you are perceived as a straight dude who happens to be white, maybe you don't get the job because of equity. This is not equity. This isn't equity. And by his definition of equity, the only equitable result would be if every applicant was given a promotion. This is not equity at all. The policy shift that he is promoting, that John Diaz is promoting, the director of the DADJ, the Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention. All this does is implement an affirmative action policy. Because in this email, he doesn't even hide what he's doing here. He doesn't hide it at all. In fact, he expresses his pleasure at seeing over half the applicants identifying as either a racial minority or LGBTQ. He says, it's important to both the county and I that our department's leaders reflect the diversity of the greater community and those entrusted in our care. He spends no time in this email focused on the qualifications of the applicants at all. Instead, what does he do? He focuses on the importance of the staff's diversity, what they look like. And it's political. In fact, he explains the process in this email as, quote, to, quote, advance equity and social justice in our workplace. But what does an acceptably diverse staff look like? I asked him, and via email, he says, it is the department's expectation that our leaders reflect the diversity of our uniform personnel, which is approximately 46% people of color and 19% women. Well, if that's the case, they will promote applicants to meet that racial and gender expectation, right? So if a white male applicant passes the test, whereas an applicant of color does not, the white male applicant is now at a disadvantage. Shouldn't the most qualified person earn the job? Wouldn't that be the right decision to make? And obviously, more troublesome, if Diaz is truly committed to this contrived diversity stat, he would have to actively stop people of color and women from being overrepresented within management. If a black female applicant is more qualified than a white male applicant, doesn't she earn the job? Shouldn't she get that job? The argument that John Diaz is making would suggest that he would stop at about 19% representation because it has to look like the community. And the community is about 19% represented by black women. Now, of course, he doesn't stop there. Of the leadership staff that he has right now, it's 27% female, 38% people of color. He is a hypocrite. This is all about anti-racism at work. This is all offensive. It is critical race theory. I've got the emails up at ktth.com. In fact, if you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'm going to send you a link directly to the piece, not just to read, not just to take a look at and be disgusted by, but I need you to share it. I need you to post it everywhere. I need other people to see this because this is what's happening. And as a result, not only are people being discriminated against, not only is this kind of stuff condescending and racist, but it's leading to wrong staffing decisions that are putting the wrong people in positions of power that will ensure that bad decisions are made. Bad, not just staffing decisions, but those staff members who are not as qualified because they're given a job based on an immutable characteristic that makes John Diaz feel good because he's looking to check some boxes off of a progressive list. It's wrong. The best qualified person should get the job. If they are noticing that it's too many, quote unquote, too many white people, cisgendered white men, then go about addressing any kind of systemic reason that you think that is the case. Don't lower standards. Address the root causes. In this case, they're very clearly lowering standards, and we need to call it out. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll go ahead and send you this exclusive story. No one else is doing this. Seattle Times isn't looking into this. They're never going to look into stuff like this. The Tacoma News Tribune doesn't care. The Stranger celebrates this kind of stuff, so they're never going to highlight it. It's on all of us to put eyeballs on it. Text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. There is a video of a recruitment ad coming from the CIA that I truly hope embarrasses everybody who touched it. I truly hope every single person who had anything to do with this monstrosity of a video to recruit millennials to the CIA, I hope they're embarrassed. I hope they never work again. I hope they understand what they've done to the CIA, because I've never been more concerned about the national security of this country than I am today. It is a video that is being widely mocked, mostly by folks on the right, but also by anyone on the left who has rejected, rightly so, the identity politics of the left, which is the majority of like normal liberals. Right. The majority of like normal thinking, reasonable thinking, non-insane folks on the left. And that, I believe, is the majority of Democrats. I think there's a loud and growing voice of insane people in the Democratic Party, in the progressive movement. However, it is remarkable to me that they're not doing more to silence the woke lunatics that are taking over their party. And it seems to be happening faster. And faster each and every day, as evidenced by this recruitment ad to join the CIA.
I can change a diaper with one hand and console a crying toddler with the other. I am a woman of color. I am a mom. I am a cisgender millennial who's been diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder.
Congrats.
I am intersectional, but my existence is not a box-checking exercise.
Yes, it is.
I am a walking declaration.
Of what? Of what? All your neuroses? Of all, I love this idea. I am not a box checking. Yes, you literally are. That's what this ad is for. It is to check a whole bunch of identity political boxes. This is an ad that is supposed to target millennials, right? Leftists, presumably because the CIA is having a hard time recruiting some folks, younger people, into the agency. But are these the types of people that we want into the CIA? Would she make a good spook? Would any of these folks? And by the way, this is not the only video like this. You have a whole bunch of different videos called Humans. We are humans. Something like that. Humans at the CIA. Because it's supposed to talk to a younger demographic that all they see are these individual characteristics. They feel defined by their status as a member of the LGBTQ community. They feel defined by their status as a woman of color, their status as someone dealing with a emotional disability, whatever it happens to be, instead of feeling defined, as they should, as their status as an American. And I feel like if you're going to join an agency like the CIA, one should hold, above all else, a pride in being an American citizen, fighting for this country, above all else, against our foreign enemies, looking to do what you can to protect this country from our adversaries, from our enemies, I should say, from China, from Russia, from Iran, from the terrorists that want to do us harm, willing to put yourself on the line in order to protect us. If you're an intersectionalist, something tells me when you identify yourself as an intersectionalist, you might not put this country first. In fact, by saying America first, it probably makes you puke. Because you probably believe this country is founded on white supremacist values, systems of oppression that need to be dismantled and then rebuilt in the image of critical race theory. That's how folks who talk like that believe. And I know that there's some people on the left who are celebrating this. Oh, it's great. She's talking about her mental health issues and she's breaking down different barriers and she's only... No, it's not great. No, it's not great. It shows weakness. Not because she's talking about mental health, but because that's how she's defining it. This is a giant virtue signal. They're not breaking down barriers. They're signaling their virtue. And they're doing it in a way that guarantees you'll get activists signing up if this is appealing to you. And I hope it doesn't. I hope this is a huge failure. Because I don't want the people who this appeals to sign up for the CIA. I want them to go about their normal way of recruiting, go into the military, pick out the people who are the right fit, the right mental fit, the ones who care deeply about this country. Go ahead and recruit those folks. Those are the ones who are really, really important to recruit, to get to join the CIA. If you're having a recruitment problem, believe me, it's not the CIA's issue. It's the issue with the generation of younger people who have been taught to hate this country and who have been taught to treat themselves like their identity, where they're bigger than this country, when the country should be bigger than their individual identity. Intersectionality. Intersectionality. Okay, yeah, we got it. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. I'll be on Fox News Primetime later this evening. If you want to watch that video, text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'll have it up later this evening. Back with more after this.